Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Every time we send an American astronaut to the International Space Station, that ticket costs $90 million per seat, but not for astronauts Bob Behnken, who's from right here in St. Louis, and Doug Hurley, who are headed to space this afternoon. At least we're going to hope that they are. They're in the Dragon capsule right now in the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. We're going to launch this thing at 4:33 Eastern. That's 3:33 Central, and we'll have that for you live this afternoon. But the weather is still somewhat questionable. Let's check in with CBS News correspondent Peter King at the Kennedy Space Center. Peter, how are you?
Just fine, and we're hoping they get off on time today, 4:33 Eastern, 3:33 your time.
I saw the astronauts, and we have a St. Louis connection here with one of the astronauts who grew up in St. Anne, went to Wash U, and also trained at Edwards Air Force Base, and I saw him take the ride over to the launch pad a couple hours ago in a pretty nice Tesla. You know, it's interesting, I noticed that 60 Minutes retweeted the interview from 10 years ago, almost 10, I guess 8 years ago with Scott Pelley from Elon Musk. I remember, I think a lot of people probably remember that interview when he started talking about SpaceX, and the time went by pretty quickly to get us to this afternoon.
SpaceX has been around for a long time, really more than 10 years, but they really came on our radar about 10 years ago when the whole commercial crew program was signed, sealed, delivered, and planned. It's taken a long time to get from there to here because, developing a new spacecraft, developing the new technology takes time, takes money, all of those things. But finally, we've gotten here.
Yeah, what's it like for you, a guy who, I come from an era in broadcasting where we used to air every space shuttle launch. I used to hear your reports for those space shuttle launches. We haven't had something like this in a while. There's a lot of curiosity about this launch. It makes for good TV, and we'll air it here on the radio. But how important is it? What is the ultimate, perhaps, possible implications from this launch this afternoon?
Well, this is very important for a number of reasons. First of all, it puts Americans back into space on American rockets from U.S. soil for the first time since the last space shuttle flight back in 2011. Second of all, it's really a jolt in a good direction for the commercial space industry, which hopes to be able to launch astronauts to the space station and other low Earth orbit applications in the future. And that's what this is all about. SpaceX and Boeing are both contracted to do those kinds of flights for NASA, but those companies will run the show. NASA is just a customer. And what this means is that NASA concentrates on other things like going back to the moon or on to Mars and deep space applications.
You know, I mentioned that, and these guys seem like they're full of personality, Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley, the two astronauts, they're going to fly together. Bob Behnken from here in St. Louis. I tweeted out a Washington Post story earlier this afternoon where they talked to these guys. They have a great sense of humor, and I can't even imagine the adrenaline that's flowing through them right now.
Well, they've got a great sense of humor. They've got they're both great astronauts with great experience. And the other thing that helps is that these guys are basically best friends, best buddies. They have known each other for ages. They were in the same astronaut class, chosen in the year 2000. They have kids that are 10 or under. And they're both married to astronauts or former astronauts. So there's an awful lot here to like.
Well, Peter, I'm looking forward to the launch this afternoon. We're going to keep our fingers crossed. I guess, you know, yesterday it didn't look too good, maybe the weather, but slowly but surely the weather picture has improved. Is it true that we're not only looking at the weather at the Kennedy Space Center, but also out where they may have to have a splashdown as well if something goes wrong?
Absolutely right, and that means weather all up the Atlantic coast. So they need good skies here. They need no electric clouds here, no thunderstorms, nothing like that. And they also need smooth seas in the Atlantic in case they have to splash down if something goes wrong. So all of that comes into play.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. CBS News correspondent Peter King, I appreciate it. Have fun with it, Peter, and we'll see what happens this afternoon in about a half an hour.
Thank you for having me on.
22 minutes and 36 seconds right now. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Dave Klein is back in the studio. You know, as Peter was talking about the splashdown, you know what happens during a splashdown for astronauts? I'm going to take a guess.
Am I supposed to know this? I don't know.
I don't know. Just take a guess. What would happen if you're, you know, twirling around in a capsule like that?
Well, I would vomit.
You know, yes, and they might too. So, Mr. Behnken, I have some audio here from Instagram that I want to play of Bob Behnken. I love they call him Bob and Doug. So Behnken says he's looking forward to the splashdown, but then he said this, I'm expecting a little bit of vomiting maybe to happen in that end game when we get to that opportunity to do that in the water together. It's kind of a weird thing to say, but I'm looking for that sort of celebratory event. And Hurley says, yes. The celebratory vomiting at the end of the mission will be excellent.
Well,
so these
who doesn't
guys have
love
a great
that?
Sense of exactly. They have a great sense of humor. You're going to hear that. You know, they put this video out a little while ago on Instagram. They did an Instagram Live, and they were answering questions from the audience. And this is Bob Behnken, who is the St. Louis. He, you know, grew up in St. Anne, went to WashU, eventually went to California, but then trained at Edwards. Here's Bob Behnken.
All right, let's see. What's my next question here? How long did it take you to become an astronaut, Bob?
That's a good question. It's kind of how long did it take me? Well, I was born in 1970, and I became an astronaut in 2000, so it took about 30 years. It took Doug longer.
No, like 2 years longer.
Yeah, two years.
All right.
So, no, it did take a while to kind of get all the things accomplished that you'd want to have on your resume when you'd apply to be an astronaut. I went through the test pilot school. Out at Edwards Air Force Base. I also got an engineering education and a degree in physics.
You got a PhD from Caltech.
I did. And so I got quite a bit of education as well as some work experience in a research lab at Eglin Air Force Base. And so I would say all those things probably took about 8 years or so. For me, once I had kind of wrapped up my undergraduate education, and it was pretty interesting when I was filling out my ROTC application, you had to fill out what job you wanted. And they actually had a duty code. You could write in astronaut on your dream sheet and see if they would give that to you. And they rejected my dream sheet and sent it back to me. So that's probably the first time that I kind of technically tried to be an astronaut by getting that duty code. And it took another 8 years or so before I moved to Houston.
That is awesome. Dave, listening to Bob Behnken there kind of recite his education, it's kind of like mine, right?
You know, oh, very
masters,
close. Yeah,
PhD,
absolutely.
Physicist, I mean, you name it. I just decided I didn't want to do science. I wanted to be a guy that talked on the radio. Why worry about all those things? So they're both military pilots. They rose to the rank of colonel, Behnken in the Air Force, Hurley in the Marines. They decided they wanted to go higher, so they joined NASA in 2000. They're selected 2 of 17 that year. They've flown to space twice on shuttle missions, never the same mission, though. And Hurley flew on the final space shuttle mission in 2012. They both married astronauts from their class, and they have kids as well. And there was a great shot from someone who posted the picture of Bob Behnken's son. I think it was Bob Behnken's son. It might have been Mr. Hurley's son, but the little boy was just looking. Let's see here if it was. I want to make sure I got the right son here. I guess it really doesn't matter. But this little boy is looking outside of the plane as he arrives in Florida, getting ready for his dad to take off into space. And you see the, you know, the site of the launch. And this little boy just looking at that launch pad. And we're hoping that he's going to have some great memories here. In 18 minutes and 46 seconds, we'll bring it to you live on KMOX.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name.
Well, we're going to talk hockey here, but I should mention, and I, you know, you knew it was going to happen. They have scrapped the launch this afternoon due to weather. It was a little iffy. It improved for a while earlier today, and then it got worse, and you had tornado warnings in the area. And some of the storm systems are sort of moving their way across Florida, but they have scrapped due to weather, and I'll have to see here when they've rescheduled. So we'll get an update for you as soon as possible. Chris Kerber's on the line. I just saw a tweet from you. You were watching this as well. You were hoping that they were going to take off, and yeah, Bob and Doug, but not McKenzie, right?
Isn't that awesome? Take off, hey.
I know. the story, I love these guys. The more I get to know about them, and I just can't imagine the buildup, you know, all these years and months. You get loaded, you take the Tesla ride over there, you're in the Dragon Command Center, and then they scrap it and they got to get you unbuckled, and who knows when they're going to reschedule this thing. So we'll find out. How are you?
I think they got a chance. I'm good. I think they've got a chance to reschedule it for the weekend for Saturday, you know, which is good. I'll tell you something, and I know you've been on the air. The coverage and the programming on the Discovery Channel around this has just been awesome. You know, the stuff you learn, it kind of recreates some of the excitement that we haven't had around the space program, you know, in quite a while. And you figure it's been 9 years since they shut down the shuttle program. So when you think that it's been 9 years since the United States has launched its own astronauts into space, and, you know, and they've been relying on you know, Russian Soyuz rockets and paying these other countries to do it, and we have had astronauts in space. It really is something else. And part of the cool part about this, Mark, is the fact that it's, you know, that it's SpaceX. So it's really commercialized space travel, which is something that if you've ever read Buzz Aldrin's book, it's something that Buzz Aldrin was hankering for and clamoring for and trying to get done back in 1970. It really is kind of cool. And I think the coverage of this, it is disappointing that it didn't go off today. They're defueling the rocket now, but it is going to happen, and I think the coverage of it and watching the social media on it has been fantastic, and I think it's really good for the space program too.
Yeah, you know, and for a variety of reasons too, and yeah, you're right, and I was unaware, and I finally saw the tweets. The next launch window would be Saturday afternoon, then Sunday afternoon. But it's cool because we need something right now. We need this. It's a good distraction. It's a positive distraction so long as everyone is safe. And that sort of brings us into hockey and sports right now, because I think a lot of people are looking toward the announcement from the NHL, although I'm not sure there was a ton of new information from Gary Bettman yesterday. I'm very hesitant to buy into the notion that we're still going to have some of these seasons, Chris. I want to hold out hope. I talk to people like you and John Rooney and Mike Claiborne, and they tell me there's going to be baseball, there's going to be hockey. So where are you right now on the remainder? What is it, 29 of 31 teams get to play in the playoffs for the NHL? Wasn't it 28, 20? No, 24. I get it.
24. Well, what they're trying to do. And
I know.
You got to play within, you know, some of the uniqueness of, you know, of the situation here. And with some teams having, you know, as many as 14 games to go, there were three teams that had that. The Blues had 11 still. You know, they had to do something to kind of keep the integrity of that process. So, look, I don't think the Blackhawks were going to make the playoffs, but they were only 6 points out with 11 games remaining to go. You know, so is it possible? Sure. And
yeah, I see.
We have some hope. So I'm okay with what they did. I really do think that they put a good detail that here's what had to happen. At some point in time, these leagues have to come up with what will be their plan if and when they can start. Because you can't start with that planning process once you're good to go. You've got to have it in motion. And also, because it's next to impossible to plan for every possible contingency and scenario you can come up with, they have to start with one plan and at least be able to build off of that. Now, you are right. There are other hurdles. First off, there's health and safety hurdles. But more importantly, there's still, as much like Major League Baseball is dealing with, economic and player issue hurdles that are going to have to be dealt with so far. Now, baseball is dealing with it on the front end because their season hadn't started and owners had not paid players yet. Hockey's dealing with it on the back end where players have already been paid their entire salary for the entire year. They don't get paid in the playoffs. That becomes part of a playoff pool. So they get paid differently from that. So the two sports are in different areas, but they will at some point be crossing the paths of dealing with economic issues just in order to get things up and running.
I understand, you know, I said something on Twitter yesterday. I think a lot of people were confused that Chicago is a potential hub city, but St. Louis is not. Now, look, I get it's ice rinks and probably things along those lines. It makes no sense to put a city that has one of the highest rates of COVID-19 compared to a city that doesn't. Do you have any thoughts on that? And again, I know that's not the final selection, but just even to not have us in the mix seems very odd.
Well, listen, I think St. Louis was going to be in the mix if there was more than if the hub cities, if they were doing like a two or four hub city process. Look, I don't believe it's going to be Chicago. I don't believe with the way that state has been handled and run on top of the fact that they've got the number of issues that they do. I don't believe it'll be Chicago when you've got Minneapolis and Las Vegas there. And they did come out and say what they're doing. They are moving ahead with a two-city plan. So I expect one in the Eastern time zone. My guess, my hunch, my thought process leads me to think it could be Pittsburgh. Because, you know, and then somewhere in either the center in Las Vegas gives you a, and think about this, Mark, a different broadcast window. In Las Vegas, right, you're going to be 3 hours behind the Eastern time zone, you know, or 2 hours behind the Eastern time zone. So you've got different broadcast windows for televising games. And I think that is part of it too. So that's why I think those two are in there. Look, I don't get a bruised ego over this stuff. You know, there's no city rivalry in my book when it comes to it. But I do think this, if you're going to do a one hub city and you're talking about bringing 12 teams in with 50 people, you're talking 600, you know, hotel rooms minimum needed, not counting all you're going to need for officials, NHL staff, and some other factors involved. I just don't know if you compare the cities that are left from a hotel standpoint, you know, and in Minnesota, you're dealing with the Twin City aspect, right? So you've got some extra aspects there. I don't think anybody should be too upset about it, to be honest with you. It's not worth the energy.
Yeah, no, and I get that.
You know what I mean?
Let's try to look optimistically. Let's say this moves forward. We basically have a framework like this. Who do the Blues play? How is that determined? And then how do we get back to the Stanley Cup Finals? Let's cut to the chase there, too, Kirby.
Yeah,
let's get us there.
Look, this is going to be good. So what they're going to do is the top four teams in the Central Division or in the Western Conference, they'll play a round robin to determine seedings 1 through 4. So the St. Louis Blues, and all this is based off of, and you can look online for the points percentage standings, which the NHL put up on their website. It's all based off of points percentage earned at the time of the stop. It's the fairest way they could do it, and the players agreed to that. So the St. Louis Blues will play one game against Colorado, one game against Las Vegas, and one game against the Dallas Stars, if and when things get going. You'll get 2 points for a win, 1 point for an overtime loss. You'll play those games with regular season overtime and shootout scenarios. And if you end up with two teams tied, their regular season points percentage is the tiebreaker, which would mean the St. Louis Blues own the tiebreaker against anybody they could be tied against. Now, the other eight teams, again, based on that seeding, are going to play head-to-head. So Chicago, they know they're going to play. You know, Chicago is going to be playing the Edmonton Oilers. They can start working on those game plans right now. Those eight teams, bottom eight teams in each conference, are going to play a best-of-five series. The winner of those four series will then move into what we know as the normal Stanley Cup playoffs, where the four rounds begin there. Now, rounds one and two, it hasn't been determined if those will be five-game or seven-game series. And that does matter. Keep in mind, if it was a five-game series last year in the second round, the Dallas Stars would have moved on and the Blues would not have. And then the last two rounds will be seven games. So I actually, you know, you hear the reasoning, you hear the understanding, you hear the challenges, and I think it's a pretty good and a very fair plan.
In theory, this would then wrap at what, like, if we get to the Stanley Cup Finals would take place when? Are we looking late August or would this push into September?
It could push into September. Gary Bettman did say that, you know, they anticipate being able to play those preliminary rounds in that round-robin tournament plus the first two rounds of the playoffs in just about a month. So I would say just over a month. They're talking about not being able to get to a training camp scenario. They want to be in a training camp scenario by mid-July. All right. And if, and even if it takes 3 to 4 weeks from there, you're talking about potentially firing up the season late July or early August. If it's going to take you just over a month to finish the first part, that takes you into September. And then, you know, it takes you about 3 weeks to finish the last two rounds. So that would take you right towards the end of September. They already know and are willing to delay the start of the next season. And Gary Bettman has said, even with an 82-game schedule, they believe that they could start the season as late as January. And I frankly think the later they can wait, the better, because it gives you more of a chance of everything still calming down and you could put more fans in the seats. So there will be a delay to the start of next season, but they do seem very committed to making sure that next season is an 82-game season with the full playoffs.
All right, so I have 60 seconds. I have to get to a CBS update. But, you know, somebody brought this up earlier this week. I don't know, maybe it was you. But, you know, basketball players, they can work out. Nearly all athletes can kind of work out at their homes, but you don't necessarily have an ice rink at your home. Are these players, and granted there's going to be training camp, how are they staying in shape right now?
Well, they're doing their own workouts, and they're doing riding the bike, Mark. But you're right, they can't get out and skate yet. Very few of them can. So that's why coming in early June, phase two, will be small workout opportunities for these guys at their local facilities that cannot have a coach on the ice, but they will start hitting the ice maybe within the next week and a half.
Yeah, interesting. Kerber, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the update. I mean, I think we're all hopeful, and I think these other leagues are sort of maybe hoping to take their cues here moving forward. So we need something. We need something back, right? Chris Kerber, the voice of the Blues. Thank you, Kerbs. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
You got it, Mark. Thank you, bud.
Unfortunately, we started that conversation talking about SpaceX. The historic launch was scrubbed due to weather this afternoon at the Kennedy Space Center, and we're getting an update from CBS News. When we come back, Mac Bradley, who is our space expert at KMOX, he's an international space expert, and he was on with us yesterday. Mac's going to have some details coming up here for us as well, and we'll find out the next launch window. So CBS update.
CBS News Special Report. A huge disappointment at the Kennedy Space Center. The landmark SpaceX launch, which had been set for just minutes from now, has been scrubbed because of storms in the area. CBS's Peter King is there.
They made it all the way down to just under T-minus 17 minutes. But the problem, as expected and as it's been all day long, was the weather. We've had low clouds. We've had rain. We even had a tornado warning at one point here in Brevard County. And the weather was just too close for comfort. The launch director actually said, if you can give us another 10 minutes after liftoff time, we'd be go. But, of course, they couldn't do that. It's an instantaneous launch window. They had to fly when they had to fly. They could try again Saturday.
This would have been the first launch of American astronauts from U.S. soil since the space shuttle was retired in 2011. CBS News Special Report. I'm Pam Coulter.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown.
Man, Mac Bradley is like a kid on Christmas morning, or he was until about 10 minutes ago. He is our international space expert. He, of course, runs Mardi Gras Inc., but we always call him in because he's, I think, even a little bit more than a hobbyist when it comes to space policy. And you were live tweeting this, Mac, and then the weather got in the way. We knew it was going to be a potential issue and a big letdown this afternoon. Are you okay, buddy?
Yeah, I think I might be okay, especially since we get to go through all the fun again on Saturday.
Well, that's actually a good point. So explain, why do you go from this afternoon at 3:33 to Saturday afternoon for a launch window? Walk me through that.
Well, there are lots of factors that go into a launch window for any flight. But when you're going to, in this case, they're flying to the International Space Station. So it also has something to do with the position of the station itself. They'll try again. It'll actually be 2:22. Central time, Saturday afternoon, is the next launch time. And then it'll take them about 19 hours once they get in orbit to chase down the space station. They have to, you got a rendezvous with the space station at 17,300 miles an hour. So that's pretty fast. So you want to get the rendezvous right. Everything's got to be in exactly the right place. So there are a lot of things that go into these launch windows. Everything looked good today, and spacecraft looked great. There were no problems with either the new spacecraft or the rocket. And Bob and Doug, of course, were ready to go, but the weather was not.
Yeah, they waited I guess, almost up until the last minute. I mean, I think there was hope. When I was looking this morning, they said 40% chance of bad weather, and then that sort of increased. And then there was a tornado warning even in the area, and I was seeing the radar. But they were trying to wait until everything was in before they made that call, because I think they wanted to get it off here today, obviously. But just imagine the situation. Although, if they follow what you said here a couple of minutes ago, all that excitement, they get to the facility, they take the ride in the Tesla, they get strapped in. It's like a 3-hour wait just from the time they get to the launch pad. Obviously, it's not right. Just waiting. They're getting, you know, getting ready for it. But that's just got to be a big buildup and a bigger letdown than you as that kid on Christmas morning, Mac Bradley.
Well, it takes an emotional toll on everybody, right? I mean, a lot of people involved in this, but at least they'll spend the next 30 minutes or so unloading the fuel from the rocket, and then they'll disable the launch abort system, and then Bob and Doug get to go eat tacos or something. You know, at least they get to eat at home tonight, I guess.
Well, we hope everything's good for Saturday, but it's a lot of fun. You know, it's been fun even after our conversation yesterday. I went out and I looked at a little bit more information that I shared this afternoon about Bob Behnken in particular, because he's here from St. Louis or St. Anne, went to Wash U and trained at Edwards. And these guys just seem to have a great personality, really good representatives of this mission. And, you know, I think people are excited about it. The amount of excitement on Twitter, because I think it's also a distraction. Chris Kerber and I were talking about this. It's really kind of fun to see, especially in the middle of a pandemic.
I think that's true. And you got, you know, good for them. They get to get off this planet, which if you're going to do it, this seems like a pretty good time to do it.
I would think so, too. Mac, thanks for everything, and keep us posted as far as what happens into the weekend. We'll get you back next week and see how this whole thing is going, provided they get it off on Saturday. After Saturday, I understand the next launch window would be Sunday, so we could get it off this weekend.
Yeah, that's the hope, and we'll be watching Saturday. Go Falcon.
All right, take care. Mac Bradley with us this afternoon, 3:41 at the Voice of St. Louis. I wanted to share some of these here this afternoon. I think Katie's Pizza is one of the best restaurants in St. Louis. Katie's Pizza and Pasta, and Katie Collier and Ted Collier, her husband, they've been big supporters of our food fight at KMOX, and I've gotten to work with them over the years. So there was a post from Katie and Ted on Sunday, I think it was. Yeah, a couple of days ago. Maybe it was Memorial Day. Yeah, that would have been Monday. And it said this, and I think this applies to where a lot of people are with going out, trying to get back to normal, eating out. And she said this, her and Ted, "I would love to hear from you about your comfort level dining at restaurants again now that stay at home has been lifted. No right or wrong answers, and I'm not a comment referee. Would you feel comfortable dining inside a restaurant in the coming weeks? Would you feel comfortable dining outside on a patio? Are you sticking to curbside and social distancing for a while? Thank you for your feedback. We will navigate and brainstorm. Love y'all and miss y'all." So my answer to this, I didn't actually post anything on the page, but I would give my answer here on the radio, that I'd absolutely feel comfortable going to a patio and hanging out. And it's not only because I don't want to be inside because of the coronavirus. Here's my thought process on this. I don't want a bunch of masks inside the restaurant. I know it's safer that way, but that's not my idea of a dining experience. So I think it would be a little bit more natural to be outside, and perhaps a little bit more freedom there. I think as we get into June, I might change my mind on that when it comes to the issue of going to the restaurant. But here's a couple of the responses, and there's more than 200 comments on this, so I'm not going to be able to get to all of them. Comment one, sticking with curbside. "I fear a second wave, and because your delivery is amazing." That's a good. "We are comfortable with going out to a restaurant. We have had a favorable experience so far." Another person, "sticking with curbside." This next person, "We are comfortable. However, we do pay attention to the bartenders and servers. Please wear your PPE properly." I think that's what people are going to do. They're going to see what's happening at some of these restaurants and going to figure out if they feel that it's safe. Julia says, "I would dine on the patio if tables were properly spaced, but not indoors." Kind of maybe feel that way. Again, it's not as much the spacing maybe for me, but just the experience overall. Heather says, "Totally comfortable going in and on a patio." Chuck, "I'm down for al fresco in a few weeks and likely inside in the fall. I want to see what happens in the interim." That's what you're hearing. I think the majority of the comments, if you look at this list here, are people saying, "I want to take a little bit of a wait and see approach." Here's Sarah, who says, "I would feel comfortable eating on a patio with the table spaced, not comfortable inside." Nancy, "I'm fine with patios and limited table seating, observing social distancing. So I bring this up for a reason. And as I go down the list here, more and more people are saying outside, only curbside, outside. And we're fine with being inside and outside. Here's why I bring it up. Because I think that you're going to find that this, even though it's not scientific, that most people are going to take a wait-and-see approach. And while some people are dying to get out to restaurants and may want to do it just to see what the experience is like, most of us probably are going to say, wait and see. And that's not a good thing for the restaurants. And I think it might be worthwhile getting Katie or Ted on here in the next couple of days or early next week and some other restaurateurs in St. Louis to talk about what they're finding from their customers. There's going to be a learning curve here. But I also think that if you're looking for some optimism, when you look at the curve of COVID-19 in this country right now, there are some great trends. There are some great trends from right here in Missouri. I'm going to feature Dr. Fauci as my audio cut of the day here in just a couple of minutes. And we haven't heard from Dr. Fauci in a couple of weeks because they stopped the task force briefings. And then he had to kind of go into his own lockdown and was keeping quiet. But even some of the things that he said in an interview earlier today are very optimistic. I had not heard him say up until this point that he thought, he was confident, he used the word confident, that there might be a vaccine later this year. I had to look twice at the screen. I saw 2020 because I think we've always spoken in terms of 12 to 18 months. So because of whatever he's seeing out there, and obviously we have the resources of the entire planet, he believes that that's even more of a possibility. But this next month, these next few weeks are going to be interesting. And I've been saying this for a while, and I'm going to extend this into what we saw at the lake over the weekend, because we are not, as I indicated 3 weeks ago, because the 26th was my original date to take a look at the country, we're not having these big explosions in numbers. And I'm not going to say this from a scientific perspective because I'm just a radio guy. I'm not a scientist, but I've heard enough medical people. We've even had a couple of people here on the air talk about how, and some of these things with these diseases, SARS was one, they're mysterious. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know for sure the effect of the summer. So with the trends that we're seeing, with the increased temperatures, with the humidity, with the social distancing outside of a pool party at the lake, the numbers are good. They're trending in a positive direction. This gives people, at least in certain parts of the country, including ours, I think, more freedom and ability to do things that we used to do before the beginning of March. 3:46, we'll take a break. We'll get you up to traffic here. Again, the SpaceX launch scrapped because of weather this afternoon at the Kennedy Space Center. We'll have much more at 4 o'clock. I have an audio cut of the day coming up next.
Yeah. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Have not seen or heard from Dr. Fauci in a couple of weeks. He was on CNN today. One of the questions, and he was asked this a couple of weeks ago. Remember, Rand Paul did not like the answer. Should schools be in session in person this fall?
The answer to that, I think, falls under the category of we can't say that one size fits all. And when people ask questions about what you can and cannot do, you always have to talk about what the dynamics of the outbreak are in the area that you're talking about. Because we live in a big country, and there are certain states, cities, regions, counties in which the level of infection is at a rate that the schools can be much more flexible in how they open. Whereas in other areas, it may be that it is really quite risky. And I think what the regions have to do under the leadership of the local regions, with some guidance from the federal government, is to take a look at what the dynamics of the outbreak are, and to make your recommendations, be it at a college or a high school or even an elementary school level. There needs to be flexibility, but judgment according to the situation on the ground.
Dr. Fauci also offered optimism, I'd say a fair amount of optimism, about a vaccine later this year.
It is possible, but when you're dealing with vaccines, you've got to remember that you're dealing with things that have a lot of vicissitudes. There are a lot of landmines and hiccups that occur. But the kind of acceleration that we're doing, which I must emphasize, is not at the expense of safety, nor at the expense of scientific integrity. What we're doing is that we're proceeding what we call at risk. And at risk, Jim, means that you take the next step before you have the results of the previous step. And the next step is an investment in resources, such as making vaccine before you have a clear-cut signal that it works. That means if it does work, you've gained a few months. If it doesn't, you've lost an investment of resources. You haven't put anyone at risk. Mm-hmm. You haven't, modified the integrity of the study. If we do that, you might remember when we first started the phase one trial and when we first developed the vaccine, I said it would be about a year to a year and a half, and that was in January. So a year from January is December. I still think that we have a good chance, if all the things fall in the right place, that we might have a vaccine that would be deployable by the end of the year.
You know, he also commented in that interview on a bunch of other things and some questions, of course, that he's talked about before. He did not rule out the possibility that there may be a second wave, but he also said it could happen, but it is not inevitable. There are 10 trials going on right now of vaccines, and some of them are having better results than others. But again, a little optimism there from Anthony Fauci for a vaccine by the end of the year. And I think he's right. Look, in schools, are Missouri schools going to be okay to come back? Yes. In fact, we're going to have some information on SLU coming up 1 hour from now with the president of St. Louis University with some plans over there. 3:56 Total Information PM is coming up next on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.